Usually when we talk about a medical diagnosis, there's this expectation of precision. It feels like engineering.
Right, it's very mechanical.
Exactly. Like you break your arm, the x-ray shows that jagged white line, and the doctor just points at the screen and says, "There it is. There's the problem."
It is binary. And frankly, I think that's very comforting for people. We like things to be visible, to be neatly categorized.
We really do. We want a straightforward mechanical fix. But then you step into the world of systemic neurodevelopment or these profound hormonal shifts, and suddenly that x-ray machine is totally
Oh,
useless.
completely useless. You're looking at the absolute definition of diagnostic muddy waters.
Yeah, it's murky. It requires looking at the whole system rather than just, finding one broken part.
Because symptoms can masquerade as a dozen different things, which leaves patients, and honestly, even their doctors, completely disoriented.
Which brings us exactly to the focus of today's deep dive. So, welcome in, everyone. If you are joining us today, you are probably someone who loves to learn, who wants to see the world from multiple angles, and who appreciates a good challenge to the status quo.
And we definitely have a challenge for you today.
We do. Today, we are looking at a really fascinating piece of writing. It is a blog article titled "Man on Menopause," written by Puru the Guru.
A title that immediately demands your attention,
Yeah.
especially given the author.
Right. It's exactly the paradox that hooked me. A man writing about menopause could easily come across as, well, incredibly out of touch.
Oh, for sure. It's risky territory.
But Puru makes this incredibly bold claim right out of the gate. He says that menopause affects absolutely everyone. He doesn't care about your age, and he certainly doesn't care about your gender.
Yep, it's a universal issue in his eyes.
From a high school boy trying to understand his household dynamics to a grandmother trying to protect her independence, he argues that this is your issue. So our mission today is to unpack the profound biology of this transition, explore the massive societal blind spot surrounding it, and extract Puru's multi-generational blueprint for navigating it. Okay, let's unpack this.
Let's do it. Because to understand why Puru insists menopause affects everyone, we first have to, well, we have to dismantle our fundamental understanding of what is actually happening at a cellular level.
Right, because it's not what most of us were taught in health
Not
class.
at all. We are conditioned to think of menopause solely as the end of a woman's natural reproductive potential. The period stop, the ability to conceive naturally ends, and that is the whole
We
story.
treat it like the reproductive chapter of the book is just simply closing.
We do. But Puru breaks down the role of estrogen, and this is where the entire paradigm has to shift. Estrogen is not just a reproductive hormone.
Wait, it's not, because that is literally all I ever associated it with.
I mean, most people do. But it actually acts as a critical systemic communication signal. And the receivers of that signal the receptors, which are essentially protein molecules waiting for instructions. They are located all over the entire body.
Oh, wow. So they aren't just in the reproductive organs.
Exactly. They are on the surface of cells in the brain. They are inside cells in the heart, in the bones, the joints. I mean, everywhere.
So it's not just a reproductive switch turning off. If I'm picturing this, it's like the Wi-Fi signal dropping across an entire smart house.
Oh, that is a brilliant way to visualize it.
Right, because in a smart house, everything is interconnected. When the Wi-Fi goes down, it's not just that you can't browse the internet on your phone.
Right, the whole system goes rogue.
Suddenly, the thermostat doesn't know what temperature to set. The security system starts glitching out. The lights in the living room are flashing randomly because they are completely missing their centralized instructions. The whole house is in chaos, not just one isolated room.
What's fascinating here is how accurately that describes the biological mechanism. For decades, a woman's body has had these cyclical but high levels of estrogen acting as that Wi-Fi signal.
Keeping the smart house running.
Exactly. Keeping her brain, her cardiovascular system, her skeletal structure all running smoothly and repairing themselves. As she approaches menopause, her ovaries stop producing those high levels of estrogen.
So the signal just starts failing.
Yes. And if we contrast this sharp, devastating signal drop in women with what happens to men, the biological reality is just night and day.
Because men have a hormonal decline too, right? Testosterone drops as they age.
They do, but it acts like a dimmer switch. It is incredibly gradual over their entire lifetime. Women, hormonally speaking, have the power line cut.
Wow. And the effects of that cut power line ripple out over a very specific timeline. Puru divides this experience into two main phases, starting with what we could call the flickering Wi-Fi phase, the immediate chaos of perimenopause.
This is the near-term phase. It's the storm leading up to menopause, which can last for several years before and after the final menstrual cycle.
And because the signal is dropping inconsistently, you know, surging one day, plummeting the next, the smart house goes completely haywire.
Right, the thermostat breaks, which explains the classic symptoms everyone knows about, like hot flushes and night sweats.
But because those estrogen receptors are also in the brain, it explains the cognitive changes Piru mentions too.
Yes, the brain fog, memory lapses, difficulty concentrating.
And the severe anxiety and mood swings. Piru points out those aren't just psychological stress. They are neurological hardware glitching without their regular chemical instructions.
Furthermore, because those receptors are in the musculoskeletal system, you see a sudden onset of joint pain and muscle aches. Receptors in the cardiovascular system lead to palpitations.
It's just everywhere.
It is. And Piru is careful to point out that the severity and combination of these symptoms vary wildly from person to person, which makes it incredibly difficult to diagnose if a doctor isn't looking at the whole house.
But eventually the storm settles, right? The fluctuating stops because the signal is just permanently gone.
Yes, and that brings us to the long-term phase, postmenopause.
And Piru highlights a statistic here that made me completely stop in my tracks. He notes that by the time a healthy woman reaches the age of 60, she will actually have less estrogen in her body than her twin brother.
That statistic forces a complete reevaluation of what a postmenopausal body is dealing with.
I mean, less estrogen than a man of the same age. That's wild.
It is. Because that protective estrogen signal is gone forever, severe long-term health vulnerabilities emerge. We are talking about accelerated osteoporosis, leading to a heightened risk of bone fractures.
And cardiovascular risks go up too, don't they?
Skyrocket, bringing an increased risk of heart attacks and strokes that often surpass men of the same age. There is a higher risk of type 2 diabetes. Even the skin fundamentally changes due to rapid, accelerated collagen loss.
Okay, hearing that list, I can already anticipate a skeptic's reaction.
Oh, for sure.
Someone listening might say, well, joints hurt when you get older, regardless of gender. Everyone loses bone density when they age. Everyone's metabolism slows down.
Right, they just chalk it up to getting old.
Exactly. It is incredibly common to just lump all these postmenopausal symptoms into the bucket of getting older.
So, is Piru essentially arguing that menopause is just another word for aging?
No, and he draws a very strict, crucial distinction here that the medical community often fails to make. Aging happens to all bodies. Everyone experiences a slower cellular turnover or gradual muscle loss over time.
Right, that's just the passage of time.
But menopause is a distinct, sharp hormonal event that acts as an accelerant. It pours gasoline on specific declines, equating the acute withdrawal of a major systemic hormone with natural, gradual aging is a massive biological mistake.
So when society and the medical field treat them as the exact same thing,
it dismisses the very specific vulnerabilities that women face, leading to negligent care. Which opens up a much darker layer of Piru's argument. Because if the physical reality is a dropping signal, the environment that person is standing in when the signal drops dictates how much they suffer.
Absolutely. The context is everything.
Because society has historically confused this acute hormonal event with general aging, we have a massive systemic failure in how we treat half the population. Piru boldly declares that while menopause itself is a natural biological transition and not an illness, society's lack of support for it is a social disease.
The term social disease is incredibly potent. A natural biological process shouldn't require a cure, but society's failure to accommodate it absolutely does.
As Piru writes in the article, awareness delayed is justice denied.
That concept of justice denied really reframes this, doesn't it, from a private medical issue into a civil rights issue?
It totally does. And he backs it up by pointing out the historical marginalization of menopause in medical research. I mean, the gender bias is just glaring.
It is. Conditions that primarily affect aging men, like erectile dysfunction or male pattern baldness, they receive vastly more attention, funding, and clinical focus.
Meanwhile, a transition that affects literally half the global population was historically dismissed as a private hysterical inconvenience.
It was under-researched, deeply underdiagnosed, and drastically underfunded. But the injustice doesn't stop at gender. It fractures even further along racial and socioeconomic lines.
Creating a deeply skewed medical playbook, Piru breaks down how the experience of menopause varies wildly across different demographics.
And this is where the data bias becomes actively dangerous. For example, Piru notes that Black women often face an earlier onset of menopause and they experience longer, more severe vasomotor symptoms.
The hot flushes.
Exactly. But Asian women report far fewer hot flushes. instead experiencing severe joint pain and sleep disruption.
And Latina and South Asian women frequently face significant genitourinary challenges.
Right. So if we look at the bigger picture of medical training, the danger becomes obvious. The medical research that does exist is heavily skewed toward white women in Western countries.
Meaning the medical definition of menopause is based almost entirely on Western symptoms, like hot flushes.
Yes. If an Asian woman goes to her doctor complaining of sudden, debilitating joint pain and insomnia, but she isn't having hot flushes,
a doctor trained on that narrow playbook might diagnose her with early onset arthritis.
And put her on the wrong medication entirely, missing the dropping estrogen signal completely.
Puru also specifically points out the massive blind spot regarding India. Almost 10% of all the women in the entire world live in India.
Think about that number.
It's staggering. Yet menopause there is severely under research, and culturally, it remains a heavily stigmatized taboo. We are trying to treat a wildly diverse global population with a shockingly narrow data set.
And this is where Puru transitions from an objective observer to bringing in his own personal reflection, which really gives the article its emotional anchor.
Yeah, he admits to profound guilt. He reflects on his mother and his aunts navigating this transition, and he realizes he had no idea what they were actually enduring.
He didn't know how to support them, and worse, he didn't even know that she should be asking.
Here's where it gets really interesting, though. He channels that guilt into action. He shifts his focus to his daughter, determined to build a world where her generation doesn't have to suffer in silence.
He isn't just pointing out the flaws in the medical establishment. He's demanding a grassroots structural revolution in how we live and work.
A revolution that doesn't wait for the medical system to catch up.
Exactly. He explicitly calls for changes in our daily infrastructure. We need menopause education in schools to be as standard as puberty education.
And in the workplace, he argues for empathetic structural policies, flexible working hours, access to rest areas, temperature control in offices.
Because women shouldn't have to jeopardize their hard-earned careers just because they are navigating a biological transition that employers pretend isn't happening.
But Puru realizes that systemic change takes decades. Schools and corporations move slowly.
They do. And women experiencing these symptoms today don't have decades to wait.
So he provides a specific actionable blueprint for what we can do right now. And what fascinated me is that his blueprint completely ignores the traditional medical model of just treating the patient.
He drafts the entire society into the treatment plan, demographic by demographic. He creates a true multi-generational defense strategy.
So where does he start?
He starts by deputizing teenage boys and young men.
Which is such an unexpected place to start.
Right. But their role isn't medical, it's infrastructural. It involves empathy as a verb, not just a feeling. They need to understand the biological reality of these symptoms so they don't react to a mother's mood swings or exhaustion with confusion or, you know, teenage frustration.
On a practical level, it means stepping up and actively taking over household responsibilities to alleviate the compounding stress that we know exacerbates menopausal symptoms.
Exactly. Then he shifts the focus to women in their 30s and 40s, the mothers and professionals who are in that premenopause and early perimenopause window.
His advice here is all about establishing a baseline defense before the Wi-Fi signal actually drops.
This is the critical window for data collection. Puru urges this demographic to aggressively track their menstrual cycles and physical baselines.
Because if you know exactly how your body operates normally, you can spot the earliest tremors of perimenopause when things start shifting.
It's also the time to heavily manage stress and dial in nutrition, building physical resilience before the hormonal storm hits.
He also pulls the elders into the fight. He tasks grandparents, specifically grandmothers and grandfathers, with the responsibility of breaking the generational silence.
They hold the lived experience. By refusing to be embarrassed and sharing their stories openly with their children and grandchildren, they dismantle the taboo from the top down.
It normalizes the transition. It turns a whispered secret into a standard family conversation.
But of all the strategies Puru outlines, the one that completely reframed my understanding of physical aging was his advice for the postmenopause phase.
You mean the fall prevention strategy?
Yes. It is so much more intense than I expected.
It really is. It has to be intense, though, because of that sharp drop in estrogen we discussed earlier. Postmenopausal women face an accelerating risk of osteoporosis.
The bones literally become more porous and brittle.
And the standard cultural advice we give older women is passive and fearful. We tell them, you know, be careful, wear sensible shoes, hold the handrail, don't fall.
But Puru rejects that completely. He says preventing fractures isn't just about walking carefully. It's about actively training your body like an athlete.
He says women need to train for power, balance, reaction speed, and agility.
Because if you trip on a rug, walking carefully doesn't save you. What saves you is the fast twitch muscle fiber response to instantly throw your foot forward to catch your balance.
It is the core power to stabilize your torso midfall.
Right. If you only practice gentle walking or slow stretching, you lose that neuromuscular speed, especially when estrogen loss is already accelerating muscle decline.
Puru is advocating for a highly active, dynamic approach to aging. You have to train your nervous system and muscles to react violently against gravity to protect those brittle bones.
It is a radical shift from treating aging women as fragile to treating them as athletes in training.
It is. But this brings up a section of Puru's blueprint that I really struggled with initially. He specifically targets women in their 20s.
He does. He tells them they need to start preparing for menopause right now.
And to a learner listening in their 20s, worrying about a transition that is 30 years away sounds completely unhinged. You're worried about your career, your social life, maybe starting a family.
Well,
why on earth should a 23-year-old be thinking about menopause?
I completely understand why that sounds like massive overkill. But if we connect this to the bigger picture of the human skeleton, Puru's insight here is arguably the most vital piece of advice in the entire article.
Because it comes down to the biological bank account of your bone density.
Exactly.
How does that bank account actually work? Because we tend to think of bones as permanent structures, like the 2x4s in a house.
Bones are actually living tissue. They're constantly being broken down and rebuilt. But the timeline is incredibly unforgiving.
Unforgiving how?
Well, by the time you are 20 years old, you have achieved roughly 90 to 95% of your peak bone mass. You have this tiny, rapidly closing window in your 20s and early 30s to add just a fraction more to that account.
And after that?
After age 35, the deposit window slams shut. You start gradually losing bone mass. You are officially in the withdrawal phase for the rest of your life.
So whatever you manage to save by 30 is all you get to live off of.
Exactly. And then at menopause, when that protective estrogen signal drops, the withdrawal rate skyrockets. The bone loss accelerates dramatically.
Wow. So your 20s and early 30s are the absolute last chance to build and harden this foundation.
If a woman in her 20s isn't doing heavy weight-bearing exercises to maximize that bone density, she's going to hit the menopause acceleration phase with a half-empty bank account.
Puru is urgently trying to tell young women that the lifting habits they build in their 20s will literally determine whether their hip shatters in a minor fall when they are 65.
It completely changes the motivation for going to the gym. It's not about aesthetics. It's about hoarding bone mass while your body still allows it.
It is preventative medicine in its purest form. And he also mentions a condition called premature ovarian insufficiency, or POI.
This is where menopause can occur spontaneously before age 40, sometimes even in a woman's 20s.
Young women need to know their family history and track their health, because assuming this transition will politely wait for your 50s leaves you completely undefended if it happens early.
Which is exactly why this information has to cross generational lines.
This has been an incredibly dense and eye-opening deep dive. Let's pull all these threads together. What Puru has laid out in Man on Menopause is a complete dismantling of how we view this stage of life.
Menopause is not just getting older. It is a profound, specific biological event.
A massive estrogen signal drop across the entire smart house of the body. It has been historically ignored and minimized by biased medical systems, leaving diverse populations without adequate care.
But the most important takeaway is that it is entirely manageable if we stop viewing it as a private burden.
It requires early action, like women in their 20s building bone density. It requires meticulous tracking through our 30s and 40s.
And it requires a whole of society commitment where teenage boys learn empathy, grandparents speak up, and workplaces completely overhaul their infrastructure to support half the workforce.
It is a systemic challenge that requires a systemic solution, which brings us to the end of our time today. Thank you for joining us for this deep dive.
It's been a great discussion.
But before you go, we want to leave you with one final thought to mull over, building on Puru's fierce advocacy for tracking and societal adaptation. Think about the world we live in right now and how obsessed we are with tracking data.
Oh, we track everything.
We really do. We have smartwatches that track our daily steps, our heart rate, our exact sleep cycles. We have apps monitoring our screen time down to the second. We obsessively track our financial portfolios, stock tickers, and quarterly projections.
It's a fundamental truth of modern society.
Yeah.
We measure what we value.
Exactly. So imagine if we, as a global society, began tracking and accommodating the profound hormonal shifts of half the population with that exact same obsessiveness and respect.
What a shift that would be.
What if a woman's hormonal reality was accommodated by her employer as seamlessly as an IT department accommodates a mandatory software update? How would the very architecture of our 9-to-5 work week fundamentally change?
The hidden human potential we would unlock would be massive.
If we stopped treating the dropping of this biological Wi-Fi signal as a private, shameful inconvenience, and instead treated it as a systemic infrastructure challenge to be solved, we'd change everything. Think about that smart house. If the central signal goes down, you don't blame the house for being broken. You rally the resources and you fix the network.
It's time we fix the network.
Keep questioning, keep learning, and we'll see you on the next deep dive.